I don't know about you, but I have too much stuff. 11 years ago, Martha and I moved out of a 16-room house, the big old parsonage on Wendell and Broad, where we'd lived for 22 years, and we moved into an 8-room house. Before we moved, we had a huge yard sale. Still, it was a good 2 years before we could put both our cars into the two-car garage. Now, this may sound like what my daughter calls a first world problem. And it is. And that's what I want to talk about. We Americans have too much stuff. And it's not good for our souls. I grew up in a middle-class American family of five, mom and dad, and three kids. We lived in a one-level ranch house with three bedrooms, two of them very small, with small closets. My brother and I shared a bunk bed. We had a one-car garage. Our house was built on a concrete slab, so there was no basement. We had a crawl space for an attic. I know that because my dad had to climb up there every year to get the Christmas tree stand. So there was not much room for storage. Oh, how things have changed. I want you to look at the four right there? Close enough. Look at the 4 square feet around you. And picture it in your mind. And that is the per capita share, that's every man, woman, and child in America, of the American self-storage industry, according to the Self Storage Association, a trade group. They say that the country now possesses some 1.875 billion square feet of personal storage. All this space is contained in nearly 40,000 facilities owned and operated by more than 2,000 entrepreneurs, including a handful of publicly traded giants like Public Storage, Storage USA, and Shurgard. These facilities pop up in the American landscape like mushrooms after a rainstorm. You know where they are, and every once in a while you see a new one. There's one on Route 7 in Lanesboro. There's one on Route 20 in Lee. And there's a huge new one on Route 295 over in East Chatham as you cross over the turnpike. This is where America stores the stuff that we have that no longer fits in our homes, even though the average American home is much bigger than it was a generation ago. You can't take it with you, as the proverb begins, but you can certainly find a place to stash it away. The self-storage industry is but one symptom that we have too much stuff. I passed a yard sale yesterday around the corner from my house. On any Saturday, you can get in your car and drive around town and pass 20 of these. Whether they're called garage sales, tag sales, or yard sales, they're events where people sell their extra stuff to other people. My stuff becomes your stuff. Your stuff becomes my stuff. In extreme cases, some of us in this nation of stuff storers become stuff hoarders. The popular AMC documentary, Hoarders, anybody seen it? Well, I'll tell you about it. It depicts real-life people who suffer from compulsive hoarding disorder. Yes, that's a real thing that the American Psychological Association added to their list of disorders in 2013, and they estimate that it affects between 2 and 5% of the population. And I've known several people who suffer, and I do mean suffer, from this problem, and it is a real problem. Perhaps you've known some as well. Now, I am convinced that this small group of the population with this actual disorder are different from the rest of us only in degree and not in kind. which is why the TV show Hoarders is so popular. We are looking at an exaggerated version of ourselves in a mirror. My thesis today is that we are a nation of storers and hoarders, and that this is a spiritual problem that is neither good for us or for the nation. I am convinced that our unprecedented acquisition of so many possessions is a form of idolatry. In today's epistle, Paul calls greed idolatry. And he's right. There was a great prayer in one of the early UCC liturgies, some of you may recall, that had this line in it in the prayer of confession. We have worshiped ourselves and the things we have made. We have worshiped ourselves and the things we have made. That's idolatry. Idolatry is when you put anything that is not God in the place of God. So if success in America is typically measured by wealth, then our possessions become a marker of our success. We accumulate stuff not because we need it, but because it fills a need in us. This is not an accident. Our economic system is designed for continual growth in markets, which many are only now noticing is unsustainable for our planet. As fish don't notice the water in the bowl, we don't notice the commercialized world we swim in, where, as Montesquieu said, superfluous things become useful, and useful things become necessary. Advertisers spend billions of dollars to tell us what we need. So we buy stuff, lots of stuff. Not so that we can keep up with the Joneses, but so that we can have more than the Joneses. Do any of you watch that profound philosophical and theological program on TV called The Simpsons? Yeah? Okay, well then you'll know that one of the recurring characters is the despicable Charles Burns, Mr. Burns, who is the evil owner of the Springfield nuclear power plant and is also Homer Simpson's boss. One day, Homer says to him, Mr. Burns, you're the richest guy I know. And Burns replies, yes, but I'd give it all for just a little more. That comic caricature of greed tells a deep truth that in our American collective life, the goal is not to have enough, but to have more. Our lotteries are based on it. Martha went to get the New York Times this morning before church, and she said, over at O'Connell's on West Housatonic Street, and said, everybody was buying their lottery tickets. I said, oh, that's what they do on Sunday mornings. There is something profoundly unchristian at the heart of the way our economic life is organized. Jesus taught concern for others, concern for the poor, and sharing what we have with those who don't have. What a contrast with the implicit selfishness at the heart of economic life, which is why I call it idolatrous. We have worshipped ourselves and the things we have made. We hear economic talk about the invisible hand and the fairness of markets and the balancing of mutual self-interest. Does that sound like Jesus? One of Adam Smith, and Adam Smith was the founder of modern economics, one of his most famous quotes is this: it is not from the benevolence of the butcher, the brewer, or the baker that we expect our dinner, but from their regard to their own interest. We permit obscene income inequality in this country because, on some level, many of us aspire to be like that, to be one of the 1%. Sure, there's only 1%, but somebody's got to be the 1%. In fact, one of the lottery commercials said, hey, why not me? You know. I once heard Bill Coffin, you know, William Sloan Coffin used to be the great preacher at Riverside Church. I was with a group of ministers one time, and he said, one of the reasons that socialism has never taken hold in America is that the Marxist theory that the world is the haves and the have-nots is not the way we think of ourselves. In America, we're a nation of haves and have-a-littles who want more. We admire the rich. Should it be a surprise that in a nation that worships wealth and celebrity, that many would choose a rich celebrity to be our leader? So Jesus' parable today, in today's lesson, is countercultural, profoundly countercultural. The rich man had so much stuff, he wanted to build bigger storage areas to store it, bigger barns in those days, because it was an agricultural economy, and his stuff was an abundance of agricultural products. And then he was going to live off what he had acquired. But Jesus said, the man is a fool, because your stuff won't save you. Your stuff won't keep you from dying. The end of the parable, God says to the man, tonight your soul, your life is required of you. You can't take it with you. And your stuff won't even make you happy. I preached a sermon years ago on love of money is the root of all evil. And one of my congregants shook my hand at the door and smiled and said, if you don't think money can buy happiness, you're shopping at the wrong store. We both got a laugh about it. But you know what? It's not true. It's funny, but it's not true. Your stuff won't make you happy. There was an article in last Sunday's New York Times in the real estate section. I rarely read the real estate section, but this was like on the cover story. And actually, I think Martha showed it to me. It was about specialized moving companies you can hire in New York for $100 an hour to come and help you decide what stuff to get rid of and what stuff to move. Because people can't bear to part with it. So these experts come in and get $100 an hour to say, that goes, that stays. That's another symptom. It shows that while we may start out owning our possessions, they end up owning us. Sure, it's fun to go out and buy something nice or fun. You buy that new car, it makes you feel happy for a time. But study after study shows that people who spend their money on experiences derive more happiness and longer happiness than people who spend their money on things, stuff. So travel, French lessons, a camping trip will all make you happier longer than that new Mercedes. I went on two mission trips to Ecuador with Dr. John Galt. Joel went on some of them too. And other members of your congregation were with me on some of them. I worked hard all day, every day, each time for 2 weeks, helping poor people get glasses, get sight. And I don't recall ever being much happier than that. So what do we do? First of all, let us listen carefully to Jesus. He says, take care, be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. Back in the 1980s, there was a movie called Wall Street about insider trading. The lead character, played by Michael Douglas, was a wealthy tycoon named Gordon Gekko. And he gave a speech to a room full of people in which he said, greed is good. Greed is good. But greed isn't good, either for individuals or for societies. I've seen families broken up over the contents of a will. I've known people whose lives so revolve around the pursuit of wealth and possessions that they have no friends. Have you heard the axiom, there are some people who are so poor that all they have is money? So here are some humble suggestions for breaking free from the idolatry of our stuff. Number one, if it is really junk, throw it away. Better yet, if it can be recycled, recycle it. Two, if it isn't junk, but you're not going to use it, give it away. Give it to the Salvation Army, or Restore, or Goodwill, or any number of other people that are happy to take your stuff and share it where it does the most good. Martha recently took an armload of our daughter Rebecca's high school prom dresses, worn once, to to a group that gives them to girls that can't afford to buy them. Number three, and this might be the most important one, don't buy it in the first place. Ask yourself a few smart questions. Do I need this? Will I use this? How long will I use this? And will it end up in a landfill? Because not only is all this stuff bad for our souls, it is bad for the planet. A good bit of it ends up in the enormous landfills that dot our countryside. Now, people sometimes ask me to connect being green, being environmentally aware, with Christian faith. And I think you can see the connection right here. That what is good for your soul is also good for the planet. So let us be conscious about reducing not only our carbon footprint for the sake of the earth, but also reducing how much we buy, store, and hoard for the good of our souls. Finally, when we change our focus from ourselves and our stuff, we can put it back where it rightfully belongs, on love of God and love of neighbor. As followers of Christ, we are called to focus on higher things. In today's epistle, Paul says, set your minds on things that are above, not on things that are on earth. Not on more stuff and bigger barns in which to store it. Rather, it is time that we start to focus not on what is new and shiny, but what is good and true and just and real. We Christians can do better. Since we have died and been raised with Christ, we must seek the things that are above, the higher things, the better things. Things that last. Amen.